I'm Grace Cavalieri of The Poet and the Poem. I'd like to introduce December Magazine's Isabel Stillman, who will tell you all about the events today for the 2024 Poetry Awards, the Marvin Bell Poetry Awards. Here's Isabel Stillman.
Hi, I'm so glad you all are here. Thank you so much. This is the first time that we've done one of these, and we're going to start doing them a few times a year because we have such a strong community around December, and I think that connecting all of us a few times is going to be really special. One thing that's particularly special about today's event is that if you don't know the backstory of December, we were founded in 1958. And then we went under in the 80s. But in that first run of December, we published Grace's poems a few times. And so she has been a part of our December community for decades. And she's such a special part of it. When December was revived in 2013 by our former editor Jonna, she revived it with a lot of guidance and mentorship from Marvin Bell, who's a great poet and such an important part of our literary community. And so when we put on the Poetry Awards last year, the one that Dorian judged, we decided to rename it in his honor. He passed in 2020. And so we renamed it the Marvin Bell Poetry Prize to honor his work in the literary community and also for our magazine, which has really just been remarkable. So we're very, very excited that Dorian is our first Marvin Bell Poetry Prize judge. We're really blessed to have so many writers join us as judges across all of our contests. We have a poetry contest, a fiction and nonfiction contest as well every year. And the people that agree to judge them, it's crazy. We've got Leslie Jameson coming up this fall for our nonfiction prize. We've had Roxane Gay. We've had Ann Tyler, Eula Biss, Joyce Carol Oates, so many acclaimed writers. And really it happens because we send them a care package and a letter and they say yes. And we're starstruck every time. And it's such a joy. It's such an honor. And we figured this year, we've had this honor for a long time. We've gotten to work with these amazing writers as our judges, and we really need to share it with our community. So we've started off the page as sort of a culmination of the prize and a culmination of the judging process and a way to share the brilliance of these writers and of the winning writers with you all. So this is our first one. It's going to be great. We're first going to talk to Dorian a little bit, hear some of her poetry. Grace is going to ask her some questions, and then we're going to hear the winning poems from a few of our finalists, our honorable mention, and our big winner. So it's going to be a great night. We're going to start off with Grace and Dorian. Thank you all so much.
I'm Grace Cavalieri, and Dorian Lux was the chosen poet judge for this year. And I just want to have you all to myself for a minute, Dorian, to talk about your own poetry. And so to begin with that, let's just hear a poem.
And what are we reading? Ode to the Territory?
Yeah, from Life on Earth.
This is my newest book, Life on Earth. And one of the poems in it is called Ode to the Territory. I've taken my country for granted, its morning songs breaking over the craggy backs of mountains, its violet gloves of rain, its frayed fields of corn. I saw it as nothing more than a long road drawn through scrub and sand, carved into hillsides, silver bridge over a river, licking its own mossed banks, its silos and windows, its silage and slag. I took it for granted, the way a man takes a plate of buttered potatoes from a woman's troubled hands, clean socks from a drawer, sheets smelling of wind. The way a man curls his fingers around a woman's thin wrist and follows her, unafraid, into the woods. The way a child opens her arms, her wings, his eyes, his mouth, like a bird, expecting to be fed. Oh, wheelbarrows filled with revers. Oh, horses threshing the meadows' yellow weeds. Oh, ponds and geese and cracked dinner bells. Oh, sparks like stars flung from the train's metal wheels, winding unbroken past backyards and junkyards. Expanse, oceans lapping, coastlines, jagged boulders holding in the sea, gulls turning above you, the tin ceiling of night falling to its knees.
Dorianne Lux, I'm so glad you started with that one because it has so much of your amazement in it and your sense of wonder, which is all throughout your poems. Now, this is your seventh book. And if someone says, what's in this book? What's it about? How would you describe this book of poems?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's difficult to put a book of poems together. And often I will, depending on the title of the book, add poems or take poems out because they don't seem to fit. This one, I just wrote a bunch of poems before, during, and after the pandemic, right? And they were about everything. Many of them about my mother, which was the end of Only As the Day Is Long, my new and selected 20 new poems about my mother. I was so happy I was done writing poems about her. And then, of course, the first poem in this book is about my mother, and a number of poems follow. But it's really just days of a life, you know, very ordinary moments, circumstances, many that you pay more attention to when you're locked down, you know, and so your senses, mind, were heightened during that time.
Well, you have a whole world of followers. You are a beloved American poet, and you are a Pulitzer Prize finalist. So here you have this cachet of success. What do you have to overcome to start a new book of poems? Do you just check that box and go on? Maya Angelou says every time she sees a blank piece of paper, she doesn't know how to write a poem. So you have behind you the Pulitzer Prize finalist. Do you have to overcome any feelings of worry or anticipation to keep going?
You know, not really. I mean, that announcement came during the pandemic. And so there was no one to celebrate with. You know, we couldn't go out. We couldn't do anything to kind of mark its, you know, passage. And so it just sort of came and went anonymously, you know. And thank God I hadn't been a finalist because, you know, I mean, a winner, because then it gets a lot more attention. Although there are only two finalists.
It's big time. It's big time. Let's hear another poem from this book, Life on Earth.
Yeah.
Dorianne Lux. Let's go on.
You said you wanted to hear I Dare You?
I do.
Okay. Now that's definitely a pandemic poem. I dare you. It's autumn, and we're getting rid of books, getting ready to retire, to move someplace smaller, more manageable. We're living in reverse, age-proofing the new house, nothing on the floors to trip over, no hindrances to the slowed mechanisms of our body, a small table for two. Our world is shrinking, our closets mostly empty. Gone, the tight skirts and dancing shoes, the bells and whistles. Now, when someone comes to visit and admires our complete works of Shakespeare, the hawk feather in the open dictionary, the iron angel on a shelf, we say take them. This is the most important time of all, the age of a divestment. Knowing what we leave behind is like the fragrance of blossoming trees that grows stronger after you've passed them, breathing them in for a moment before breathing them out. An ordinary Tuesday, when one of you says, I dare you, and the other one just laughs.
The reason I love that is because we know your life through your poetry. We know you as a young girl. We know you as a young woman. And your poetry, if you look at the whole canon of works, is really sequential. You're right about each time of your life. And this is a time of your life presently, which I can relate to so well. Also, it's a perfect relationship poem. This poem could not describe a relationship anymore if it were graphically and visually drawn. It shows people that know each other so well that they don't have to say much more than "I dare you." And so please go on. Let's hear another poem from Life on Earth.
Life on Earth. This one is called Biscuit, which was for us a constant in the house. We were never without a box of Biscuit. My mother could whip anything up from a box of the stuff, a casserole, a cobbler, Mississippi pot roast with cheese biscuits, chicken and dumplings or fried chicken, the skin crispy as her cookies and pie crust. It seemed the oven was always on, the dial pointing to home, where we'd run back to from wherever we had gotten to, leaving footprints on her clean floor, mud or sand, or the water that thundered from the hose in summer. She served the silky gravy in a scratched glass boat, poured like good fortune over our mashed potatoes, all of us having dug out our wonder craters to receive it. And sometimes I came home early just to smell the air scented with mingled spices, see the banners of flour the pan left on the counter when she lifted it, the bottom blackened by years of burned butter. We'd wake to pancakes in the cast iron skillet, and it seemed she'd never slept, never stopped, eggs cracking open, spilling each whole yellow globe into a blue bowl. What were we waiting for but to see her at the sink, her long bare feet on the cool tiles? Just an ordinary woman made of flint and roses, her black hair tied back with a drugstore scarf.
A drugstore scarf. You know, you've made your mother permanent. Isn't that something? Yeah. Your mother will last forever. That's kind of a miracle, isn't it? We know her so well. We do know her so well. We love her so much. Well, they call you the witness of the everyday. What does that mean to you?
I don't know. For instance, that poem about my mother, to me, she was a magician. She was a heroine, you know. I mean, she's raising all these kids and studying to be a nurse and cooking all these meals. I mean, it was like, how does she do this?
And playing the piano. And
playing the piano. And, you know, she was just a miracle and a mystery to me. And it was what she did every day that made that day special, that made everything sparkle.
But what makes the poem special? And that is the imagery. That is the specificity. That is the detail. If we can teach people the burned bottom of the pot, if we can teach people that it's not any scarf, it's the drugstore scarf, that is why you are the witness of the little objects in life, the tiny things that people think are not poetic material. But we want to hear more, please.
Really?
Box? Yes.
We only picked out three.
No, I said if we have time, we would do in any event, page three.
Oh, page three. Thank you so much. Okay. In any event, and this is the opening poem of the book. Mm-hmm. It's sort of for all of us. In any event, if we are fractured, we are fractured like stars, bred to shine in every direction, through any dimension, billions of years since and hence. I shall not lament the human, not yet. There is something more to come. Our hearts, a gold mine, not yet plumbed, an uncharted sea. Nothing is gone forever. If we came from dust and will return to dust, then we can find our way into anything. What we are capable of is not yet known. And I praise us now in advance.
The unforgettable poetry of Dorianne Lux. And we will now go back to Isabel Spellman.
I'm here.
Isn't that lovely? Wasn't that lovely?
A billion years since and hence. Wow. I love hearing Dorianne read poems.
Thank you.
Now we're going to hear more poems from some of our winning writers. Dorian selected 10 finalists, an honorable mention, and a winner. And we're really, really excited to have them here today reading their winning work. We're going to bring them up one by one. I'm going to put their bio info in the chat. So see the chat for more about them and listen for their poetry. First up, we're going to have Aiden Hyung.
Hi, everyone. Aiden here. And good evening. And well, I'm quite new in the States. I only moved to St. Louis last August after China's, you know, COVID-19 lockdown. Then, so everything was so new to me. I was different in this country, new in this country. And I was like, well, I gotta write something about this country, about the place I lived in. So this might be, I think, the second poem I wrote here in the States about St. Louis. So I'm gonna read it. It's Mannequin. Last day of August, but here in America, I'm tired on my skin. The heat stings like thorns. I want to regain a life, a cicada straggling into the wrong summer with the wrong note. Heal me. On the horizon, a swirl of birds. On the boulevard, a car speeds on the parked asphalt road. Runners cut paths into the green. I thought it would be easier to leave a place behind, to exchange one language for another. But my tongue yearns to undo alphabets, and my palms confound me with growth rings. I reach out to the light, hand wet and glistening. At least I can still recognize my body here and now, reclining by a chaperone window like a mannequin, where the city opens like yellow pages, then closes without a name. Thank you. And thank you, Doreen and December, for liking my poems. Thank you.
We love that poem. Thank you, Aiden. Next up, we have Allison Lubar.
So the poem that Dorian selected is called Bullet Points. After Columbine and Pulse and Uvalde and Club Q and in the alleyway behind Taboo Sports Bar, we bump elbows with fellow babes. Excuse the purple glitter, it gets everywhere. And pull slim seltzers from a rainbow backpack. We wait in the purgatory of the Q and $10 cover. We risk the Eden of self-actualization, flaunt, protect, trans, youth, on tie-dye t-shirts, pink, triangle, beanies, even in the summer, a dyke pin on my black denim jacket. I don't wear that one to school because of the Texas teacher fired for a picture of her and her future wife on Halloween, dressed as a platonic pair of innocuous cartoon fish. What am I keeping my students safe from? Are they safe to be themselves here? Am I? In our classroom, after the first lockdown drill, we always hypothesize, what would we do? And I weigh my life against. And I say how lucky we are to be on the top floor, and it would be easy to barricade the doors, climb onto the roof. They ask, can we have class out there? But admin has padlocked the big window for our safety. Sometimes I see former students in the gay neighborhood, and I send a breathless blessing their way, smile as in, I didn't need to know, but now that I do, I love you even more, you sweet kiddo, you. Eventually, we turn back to Langston Hughes or Beowulf, and one day I'll turn back to just slow dancing with my wife in the midst of the DJ mixing Muna with Whitney. But for now, Ooh, baby, I check. Do you know what that's worth? The exits and I, the bar tops, wonder if they'd slow a bullet or stop it. Would I be the one to tackle him or usher others out onto Camac Street? We made heaven. Call 911. That's one more digit than Dante's divine number. There are so many types. A place on earth of hell. How easily they slither into every single paradise once more. How easily to ignore every hollow thought and prayer bullet point. Thank you so much.
It makes my heart thump. Thanks, Allison, so much. Next up, we have Elizabeth Hickson.
Hi there. My name is Elizabeth Hickson, and I just wanted to say how honored I am to be here and share this space. So thank you for having me. Ode to the smallest supernova. The morning sun arrives in textures. The heat drifts through me, and again, I long to understand softness, to phantom into language what is so easily omitted. The bead of black in a lone cardinal's eye, the discarded pit of the dark fruit you fed me, the morning my blood oceaned our sheets. It has been another month, and we have yet to speak of its smallness, of aperture, of the empty air between us. What Exodus has taught us cannot be named. It is as heat is, the shush of steam making shapes of itself off in the distance. In the mirror of kitchen window, I wash the persimmons as if all things can be cleaned. In the evening, we will gather around a tired flame, the smoke drifting upward toward a blanket of light, toward a blue-black somewhere, some bundle of smallness, bursting forever into darkness. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Next up, we have Lexi Pell.
Ode to the box of red lentil pasta. Left in the cookie aisle, probably swapped for Pepperidge Farm Milanos or a bag of soft bake Montauk. Sometimes the voice from above stops talking about savings and stocking up on soups, switches to a song. Sometimes a smartly dressed blonde with too much kale in her cart says she likes your last season coat. Life is like that. Bag of chips not full to the brim to stop what little lays there are from breaking. It's not such a ripoff. Maybe my mom stood in the frozen section of her future and swapped something sensible. The good accounting job, the lethal patent leather Saturdays for me. What have I put back in service of sweetness? Is it sticking with you? Your gamer phase, your sneakerhead phase, your let's try tying each other up phase. Regret is where God isn't. The box isn't beautiful, but I like looking at that blushing penne pressed up against the plastic film, those mute flutes, rosy tunnels to nowhere, telescopes enlarging where the stars are not. Thank you.
Thank you, Lexi. I love that line, regret is where God isn't. So good. Next up, we have Nicole.
This is my poem titled Bones Arched Like Flowers after Alejandra Pizarnik, and trigger warning for suicidal ideation. In the middle of a rainstorm, I take my neighbor's dog for a walk, as promised. I just been laid off and I needed the money. And who doesn't love sending black girls into sharpened water? She watches me attach the leash. Good morning, ma'am, is working from home today. Heard the echo of her pinned fingers. Her dog suffers from dementia. Cannot hold a sit without his legs sliding from under him. bites when his memory brackets. On our walk, he leans against me like a better ghost. I want breathing to stay away from me. This can't be unlearned. And the dog, just himself. No talk of selfish for letting the ache reach his eyes. Am I lucky that guilt isn't flexible? Perhaps this is all I ever was, considering the audience before the room. Because Nurse Beth can't live without me. Because she cuffed me to the hospital bed to bookmark the animal. My face into the hot bowl of her neck. 5 unsupervised minutes. The dog mistakes another dog for something nearer. Sometimes dying gets distracted. The wind slants the rain until it burns, until we're glossy at the traffic light. I could stand this in my sleep. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you so much, Nicole. Next up, we have William.
Thank you, Dorianne, and thank you, December. Jellyfish season, Chesapeake. They come, and cold-defying stay, content to hover in the brackish dark. It's almost springtime here in Kent Island, Eastern Bay, when subtle magnetisms draw their lot, some outflung strands of tidal lure. The first we see are furrow-ringed, with locks descending through a greenish hue. Jellyfish, of which they're not quite either one, or neither, just, I want a word to mean I wander, or I pass, or else what flows throughout me names me utterly. For this is merely drift, the wet made sensitive, an ocean flexing in and out. How fine, at last, to be a life without a mind, without direction or distress. How slim a way to pass ensoulment's hour, reflected in an empty glass, devoid of art, and so much like ourselves on shore, both one and still apart.
Thank you so much, William. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Next up, we're going to hear from Timothy Kelly, who was our honorable mention. We'll hear his poem, and then Grace and Dorianne will come on for a few minutes just to talk about the piece and what struck Dorianne about it so particularly. There you go. Thanks.
This poem is a story of my mom's favorite song, which is called I've Got You Under My Skin, a song written by Cole Porter in 1936. I've Got You Under My Skin. The Nelson Riddle arrangement, of course, from Sinatra's Songs for Swinging Lovers in 1956, was on when my mother, awash in morphine in her hospice bed, began to nod her head and tap her finger, her right arm, IV dangling in midair. And then without opening her eyes, she sang out the last full verse of that song perfectly. And it was the last coherent message that she ever gave us. All 4 of her kids were in that room, all of us having grown up mortified by her proclivity for singing out in elevators, grocery stores, dentists' waiting rooms, first time dinners with her kids' fiancés, waiting rooms, and echoey public bathrooms, with or without musical accompaniment. The only item we brought with her from the house to hospice was a boombox and her discs. I once watched her sing to a cop who was writing her a ticket. When I moved west, I began to study the local songbirds' songs, the nuthatches, chickadees, juncos, finches, wrens. Most birders hold that birds sing to either attract or defend. No one has postulated that birds sing purely for joy. But that would be my mother. Ripping into the last chorus of a choreographed show tune in the vegetable section of Kroger's at 11 a.m., utterly unprovoked. Her two older kids, one aisle over, absorbed in some colorful packaging, pretending we belonged to someone else.
Oh,
wonderful.
That honestly, I absolutely am enchanted. Dorianne, what would we do without story?
Yeah.
What would our world be without story? Mm-hmm. And didn't he tell a story, though?
Yeah, you know, and he did it with such indirectness. I mean, it's kind of wonderful. It moves around very discursively. He takes his time, as all good storytellers should. You know,
and this is the honorable mention, and so you chose it for a reason, and it has to be that you love a narrative poem.
Well, and I love particularly this story, as it really struck me on a personal level, in the sense that my mother would also, you know, right? How many mothers completely embarrass their children in public over and over again, you know? And with her, it wasn't singing. It was just telling the cashier what she thought of this store. Or, you know, right? You know, she just had to tell everybody what she thought about everything, what could be improved, what, you know. And it would just embarrass the hell out of me. And yet, as my poems show, I loved my mother. And you make me want to write a poem about the way she used to embarrass me.
Well, he captured it, and he captured tragedy and humor both together on the head of a pin. When you can blend those two together and you want to cry and you want to laugh, you know, that is writing. That is writing. Timothy, I'm interested in your process. Is this typical of your writing, where you go back and run the reel of your life and tell us what happened? Is this a typical Timothy poem?
I'm not now. It was more at one time, and I made my living as a physical therapist, and that created a lot of narratives that I ended up turning into poems. But this is a later one that I fell in love with the story because my mom just died 3 years ago. And, you know, I wanted to do a tribute to her in some way. So.
And you did. And when we have this poem, she didn't go anywhere at all. She's here forever with this poem. And so did you incubate this for a while and just nurse it? Or did you just sit down and it came to you?
Mm. I think it probably came out in this general form. Because I had told them I was going to do it, I wanted to send all three of my siblings the poem, which is something I never do, and wait for their feedback. And fortunately, they were kind, and they, you know, they saw the same story that I did, so that went well.
And I noticed you changed a lot. You revised it quite a bit since I saw the original poem.
Oh,
too much. Yeah. It just made it easier to memorize.
Not too much, but nice little tightening changes, and you know, midlife instead of in the middle of, or, you know.
So that's interesting. He recited it instead of read it. Is that correct? That you recited that poem or that you read it?
No, I recited it.
That is a wonderful. I thought it felt so natural, as if we were just sitting at my kitchen table and you were telling me this story. So I think we should recite our poems more, maybe. That was so natural, Timothy.
Thank you. Don't people stop you sometimes and ask you to recite a poem for them if they know you're a poet? Of course they do. So what? I've got about five or six, but you know, that's the only one that I have of my own that is.
Yeah.
You know,
well, Dorian, what is it about the courage that it takes to tell embarrassing moments? And when we put them on the page, they turn out quite differently. What would you like to talk to a little bit about courage? Because you've got lots of it. You tell it the way it is. What does it take to take risks? What do you think, Dorian?
Well, you know, you're not really aware that you're taking that risk, really, most of the time. You're only aware, but maybe afterwards, where you look at it and say, oh, God, would my brothers and sisters be okay with this?
Or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, but while you're writing, you're lost in a world that knows no censorship, no second thoughts. It's just putting it down as it is. And the trick is just leaving those awkward moments, those, right, you know, and letting them play out. And also, it's life.
But Dorian, wouldn't that take a seasoned poet to be so immersed in your bubble and without caring about someone looking over your shoulder saying, this isn't good enough? Doesn't that come from just writing long enough? Because did the beginning, Dorian, really not care or worry about what people thought?
I pretty much didn't.
I believe it. I believe it.
I've just never been one of those people that cared a whole lot, you know, about what other people thought. And
where the
validation, you know, certain pieces, of course there was, but not in the writing of them, only in the reading or public nature mm-hmm. of them. Right. I wasn't embarrassed by it or ashamed of it. Or
well, we're the recipients of what you've got to give. And Timothy, thank you so much. When you read this, did you know right away that it was one of the winners, Dorian? Right away, did it strike you?
I liked it a lot. It went into the yes pile very quickly.
That's good. How many piles did you have?
Well, I had yes, no, and look again. You know, like kind of maybe I just read it too quickly and need to look at it again. But yeah, there was yes and no, and the no's were pretty easy right away, and the yeses were very easy right away. So it was the middle ones, the maybes.
Well, they were lucky to have you as a judge. And Isabel, where is our final winner?
Our final winner is coming up, Susanna Lang. Let's hear it.
Susanna.
Thank you. I am not going to recite. I have never been able to memorize anything at all. This is In Your Father's Garden. Your father used to deadhead his roses early, before the sun had dried the lawn. A black-capped bird would wait nearby. It knew where the seeds were hidden. Sometimes it perched on his hand, a reminder. Others are here with you. He had lived so long. How many dead roses can one man snip in a lifetime, making room for new buds to open? And what had brought this chickadee into his hands? The brief touch of its feathers, its wild permission? Thank you.
Beautiful. I wonder what Dorian thought when she read this and felt that it was number one.
There is such tenderness and quietude and beauty in this poem. You know, it's not flashy. It's not a narrative. It's not, it's just a little lyric about a moment in time. And what I love about it is that you're not at all, because of its quietude and clearly very considered, right, creation, line by line by line, building this little world. I did not expect that final line. Mm-hmm. Wild permission. Mm-hmm. And of course, wild means the bird. The bird is wild, but it's also wild permission, you know, permission to be wildly alive, to wildly love someone, to wildly be trust, you know, a lot of things. And so I think I was most enamored of the surprise, which every poem needs, right? I mean, our honorable mention had surprise where he says we pretended she was someone else after he makes us fall in love with her, right? He says, oh, well, we pretended we belonged to someone else. No, you belong to her.
Good point. Yeah.
Great surprise. Well, this is a great surprise, too. And I like to be surprised by poems.
And what I loved as well is the mystery in the poem. We don't know everything. This poet trusted the reader so much that she just didn't feel she had to hit us over the head with the meaning. She restrained herself. It's elegantly restrained, and it's filled with mystery. Who is your father? And what had brought to this hand this wild permission? It is filled with little universes of mystery in four small stanzas. Quite masterful.
Yeah. Yes.
So I guess, Susanna, I'd like to know what you like about it.
For me, it's just a lovely memory. This was my father-in-law, and he was a gardener. He lived to be 101. I think I wrote this when he was 93, and as I revised over the years, I kept upping the age and finally gave up on putting an age in there. And he gardened almost to the end. And he told us on the phone about this bird that had landed more than one morning, had landed on him. And he didn't know what kind of bird it was, but he described it clearly enough that I could figure it out. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that chickadees actually are very human curious. They do this. I've seen people in a bird sanctuary here in Chicago bring sunflower seeds and hold out their hands, and chickadees will come to their hand. But my father-in-law was just gardening. He didn't have any treats. And the chickadee still wanted to land on him and see what he was doing. And he felt that companionship. And his wife had died, and we were far away. And
well, it's filled with love. One thing that Dorianne has in common with this kind of poem is compassion. And a lot of times we hear the word compassion with Dorianne's own poetry. And I was wondering if you would speak to that, Dorianne. Do you think compassion is the same as love? I see compassion in your poems as being able to step into someone's shoes and know how they feel. And I felt that in this poem as well. Would you say a word about compassion?
Well, I think every poet feels compassion for their subject. You know, it's compassion seems to me to be a necessary, right? A necessary human response to the world. You know, when you walk through the world with compassion, the things begin to seem, you know, just lovelier, you know? I mean, In your poem, Suzanne, when you tell me, and I'm shocked that you did not see the scene, that you're imagining it, right, from your father's description. Well, that is attention to detail. That is really listening to another person, taking in that feeling that they're trying to tell you about, which there are no words for. Right. And then you somehow finding the words, the images, the sounds, right? And that's a kind of compassion, which really is only a very close looking through love.
I love that. Compassion is a close looking through love. I love that. And this poem has so much tenderness. It is so feeling. It's a whole feeling state with language. It's a whole feeling state. So I love poets. What would we do without them? What would we do without this fabulous state of being? I just think the whole evening has been thrilling. I feel hydrated. I feel buoyant. I feel happy to be alive. Yeah. So, Isabel, what do you think of all your poets?
I think they're so, so good at writing poetry. I was just...
You've got a bunch of winners. You've got some winners.
It's just amazing. And I've never heard them read aloud. I've read them a lot of times, right? Our staff reads the submissions and we send 25 or so to our judge. But so I've read them aloud, but I've never heard them aloud. And it's just really, really amazing. Thank you all so much for reading. Thank you, Dorianne. Thank you, Grace. That was hydrating is the right word for
we
that.
We can't wait till you have the next off the page.
We've got the next off the page. Coming up this fall, stay tuned. We've got Leslie Jameson and Toloto Tomase, who are our prose judges. We'll have each of them in a separate event. Thank you all so much for coming, for rolling with the technological punches. Stay tuned on the website, our Instagram, our newsletter. We'll fill you in on the next events. Thank you so much for being part of our community, and we'll see you next time.
Yay, December.
Yay!